My name is Erica Lim, age 31. Today is January 29th, 2017. We're in New York, and I'm with my partner Yelida, who's my sister from Sister Diaspora for Liberation.
Yes. Okay, I'm Yadira de la Riva. I'm 36. Today is January 29th, 2017. We're in Foley Square, New York City. And I am with Erica, who's my sister in Sister Diaspora. I was gonna say we're also like in the belly of the beast. Financial district of New York City. All right.
So Yelida, I know you grew up in El Paso, Texas, a border city. I was wondering, so if you could talk about your mother's story and how you ended up there, how she ended up there, where she's from.
Okay. my mom is the second oldest of 10 kids, and she was born and raised in Ciudad Juarez, Mexico. It's right across the border from El Paso, Texas. Mm-hmm. And because she's the second oldest, she had to start working early on so she could help her family, all my aunts and uncles and my grandparents, mm-hmm. Sustain themselves in Ciudad Juarez. So by the age of 16, she started working in the maquiladoras and the factories in Ciudad Juarez. And one of the biggest factories then in the 70s, I want to say, was RCA, which is a electronic factory. So mm-hmm. she was in the assembly line to make televisions.
She was 15.
Yeah, she was about 15, 16 when she started working mm-hmm. there, because that was like the legal age to start working. So it was kind of like a waiting game to get into the factory. I mean, she started working in a lot of other places before that, because mm-hmm. that's just what the family would do. I think my grandma had like, for sustainability reasons, you know, to have like food on the table, she would put her kids to work. I would say like she was kind of like the boss. she ran an agency of of labor through her kids. So yeah, so that she would do like all the kids would do favors for the neighbors and stuff like that. So for my mom to have a legit job, she was like, okay, let's just get this moving. So yeah, that's my mom. She met my dad when they were about 15 or so. They got married like around 20-ish. And then my dad was in the military. So that's how she was able to get...
In the U.S. military.
Yeah, in the mm-hmm. U.S. military. His mom was already a citizen. She was born, I think, in Arizona, but she went back to Mexico and raised her family there. Mm-hmm. But all there is to say is that my dad already had access to residency through her, even though he was born in Mexico, and that's how he was able to get my mom residency as well. Mm-hmm. So because of that, both my sister and I are U.S. born, but we're also registered in Mexico, so we have dual citizenship. Mm. Yeah, and that's what happens on the border. Like, you can have that. You have access to those things, to be registered on both sides, and to be able to, even though we lived in Juarez, and we lived there till I was, like, 5, all we had to do was just cross the bridge to be born on the U.S. side, get that paper, go back home and get those papers too.
How often growing up did you go back and forth across the border?
When we lived in Juarez, not too much. it was only my mom that would go back and forth to work. We would hardly ever go, actually. And whenever we would go, it was to buy things. And it was usually really boring. Like, Juarez was always a lot of fun. Like, it was just more lively. There were more people out and about. Everybody, it's like the sense of community is, I guess, culturally stronger. Like, people will say hi to each other a lot more. They'll know each other. They'll know each other's business a lot more. And whenever we went to El Paso, it was just kind of empty. Or people, yeah. And then we didn't know anybody either. So it's like, oh, you know, we're just here to buy things and then go back.
When did you move to El Paso?
We moved when I was about 5 years old, when I was ready to go to school, so my mom wouldn't have to worry about who was going to take care of me, because my grandma took care of me when we were in Juarez, but once I was in school, then I would be in school. So it was, yeah, between like 4 and 5, and we had a tía that lived in El Paso, and she was kind of like my mom's support network there. So we moved with her, and then she would just take care of us overall when my mom would have to go to work. So we had her.
What was it like when you moved, or did you, what did you feel about that at the time? Or
Well, I have an older sister. She's 4 years older than me, and I feel like I saw the world kind of through her, because I would just stay at home, you know, I remember growing up with my grandma. I was always at her house, you know, because my mom was at work. And then when we went to El Paso, I just stayed at my tía's house. Like, I didn't know anything. I was still with family. I was still in a comfortable space. But my sister, I would see her, you know, come back and forth from school. And yeah, I think she's the one that went through most of the, like, culture shocks, you know, like not knowing English. She had to repeat a grade because she didn't know English, even though on every other subject Mexico's probably a little more advanced. So when it comes to math and reading and writing, all that stuff, they're usually ahead. But because of the language, she had to go back, and she had to leave all of her friends at, you know, her school friends and her whole community. So I remember that. But I guess when I started going to school, I went to school, I was in a bilingual program. So I started in Spanish mostly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I didn't go into English, like all English, until like fifth grade. Yeah.
And how is that switching over?
I didn't really like it. I guess that's when I started to notice like the separations, because it was like the Spanish, the ESL kids, and then there was like the regular kids, and then there were the gifted and talented, you know? So it was like,
I hear that from a lot of my friends who grew up speaking other language and English as a second language, that they treated that class almost as if it was like some remedial, or, you know, like the kids weren't as smart or something. But in actuality, it's like, no, these kids speak multiple languages.
I'm just like, and I had friends in all the classes. So I'm like, we talk, like, what's the difference? Like, you know, we play the same, we talk the same, we talk about the same stuff, but you're in that class and I'm in this class. And and I didn't really like it. I didn't like moving to English. I didn't really like the teacher. Actually, I almost felt like the ESL kids got pushed even harder because, you know, I guess of the language or whatever. Because when I went to just English, it wasn't as challenging, I don't know, or maybe as fun. It was very standard. It was very by the book, really boring.
Memories that really stick out to you about being in school, like any interactions with teachers or other students?
Uh, Yes, I remember. So El Paso, because it's a border town, and this is my theory, but I feel like there's been like writings about it too, that because it's a border town, the job of border towns are to like Americanize kids, Americanize people overall, so you can differentiate like one side to the other side. So I remember, I remember a lot of like the English learning stuff was very like, this is the U.S., you know, and like, let's learn a song about the grand old flag, you know. And I didn't know what I was saying, but I knew how to sing the song, you know. Mm-hmm. And then the 50 states, learning the 50 states. And I remember there are these trailers, and I don't know if it's just in Texas or El Paso or whatever, but there are these trailers that have in writing Mayflower. And I don't know if it's a company or what. I haven't seen them too much after that. But I remember they brought that trailer to my elementary school on Thanksgiving. and they made, or maybe I just fell for it, but they're like, this is the Mayflower, you know, even though it's a trailer. But it was like, they just made us think that, you know, this was what it looked like, or this was the grand old, you know, Mayflower or whatever.
How was your mom with you with these issues of like identity and like assimilation and, or, you know, culture, things like that?
She just worked. She didn't really have time to check in with us necessarily. Mm-hmm. Like, we managed, once we started going to school, we would manage ourselves. Mm-hmm. If anything, she would probably wake us up. She would call us to make sure that we were up. But after that, you know, we dressed ourselves. We went to school. We came back, did our homework. And then maybe by the time we were done with homework-ish, then she would come home and she would be tired. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was just like cooking for us. It was very practical. She would cook for us. We would eat. She couldn't necessarily help us with homework because, mm-hmm. you know, it was in English, and then that wasn't necessarily her strength. But the time that we did spend with my mom was going back to Juarez, mm-hmm. just going back to see our family. It's like, throughout the week, we would just handle business. Like, school was just like, handle business. Handle mm-hmm. business, because in the weekend, we're going to go to Juarez. Mm-hmm. And that's where we really do, like, the, how do you say, convivir, like, the real bonding. Mm-hmm. The real bonding, the real quality time was going back to Juarez. Mm. Yeah.
What's a memory that you have of your mother?
The whole going back and forth, the getting ready to go to work. Like, my mom just always working. So mm-hmm. getting up super early. She cares a lot about, you know, what she looks like. So she mm-hmm. always made herself up, like mm-hmm. her makeup on point, hair on point.
Sounds like outfits
on point. Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's, and she took joy in it, you know, mm-hmm. to her working was something good. It was like having agency, you know. She would hardly ever complain. Mm-hmm. She was like, no, man, like, I can work, you know, mm-hmm. I can work, I can provide, not just for my kids, but for my family. She had a lot of friends mm-hmm. at work, so that was like her social life and her agency, her strength. So, yeah. And yeah, just coming back and forth from work. That's what I remember most. And dolling herself up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, the order of that. It was like putting on makeup. So showering, putting on makeup, getting dressed. She would lie on the bed sometimes because she would wear really tight pants, and she would lie on the bed to, like, you know how that, like, tucks your tummy in a little bit and yeah. like and just zip it up, and I could feel all of that because I used to sleep with her. I used mm-hmm. to sleep with my mom, so I just, even if my eyes were closed or, you know, it wasn't time for me to wake up, I would just like lie there and and listen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To her getting ready in the morning.
Yeah.
And what kind of woman was your mom, if you could describe her?
Yeah, just very, very driven, very practical. I think my mom, it's interesting because I'm in my 30s and I remember my mom at her 30s and she was just a champ. Like, she was just about it. Like, she took a lot of pride in providing for herself, for her kids, mm-hmm. for my grandma. And and she talks about it still to this day, like, okay, to make money and to handle bills, but always that little extra. That little extra was like everything, because mm-hmm. you could shop, you know, you could get yourself, you know, two really nice blouses and a pair of jeans. Like, all of that was like, wow, you know,
mm-hmm.
Putting things on layaway for us, you know. Yeah, like we took joy in those things. It was exciting.
And were you close to your mom growing up?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I slept with my mom in her bed till I was like in fifth grade. So yeah, I followed her a lot.
And would she ever talk to you about anything, like about her life or history or any difficulties or, you know, her days at work or anything?
Mm-mm. She would never complain about work. And then, like, her personal life, it would just spill out. Like, she couldn't help it. You know, because she was at home. So, mm-hmm. so yeah, if she felt sad, like, yeah, she would cry. Also, she would talk a lot with her friends on the phone. So you could hear what mm-hmm. was going on. You know, and it was always stuff with my dad or whatever chisme was going on at work. Like, it would spill, you know, you would find out. Also, when we would drive back and forth across the border, she would, because a lot of times we would fall asleep, like mm-hmm. the ride of the car, at least I would fall asleep. But I, again, still like eyes closed, but I'm still aware of what's happening. And my mom would talk to herself.
Mm. What would she say? Do you remember anything that?
I don't remember specifically what she would say, but I think that was her time to like process whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. Because I'm not even talking about anything bad. But yeah, I remember her, like, if she was pissed, yeah, she would be like cursing.
Mm-hmm.
Not loud, like, it was always to herself. She'd be like, in Spanish, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or just figuring things out.
I think a lot of single mothers, and especially immigrant mothers, you know, I think they hold so much emotion in a lot of times.
Yeah.
Like, I can relate to some of the things that you're saying. They don't express or complain or,
yeah,
you know, they just like, this is their, I feel like a lot of times they're like, this is just what life is. And you work hard and you don't complain about it. And
yeah,
you kind of like, you become like a champ. Like, your mom is a champ, right? And
yeah,
you're a champ for your family and for your kids. And
mm-hmm.
I feel like a lot of times they didn't have time to process things or, you know, strangely, I mean, I know my mom, she felt, even though she had to work a lot and had a lot of problems, she felt lucky, you know?
Yep.
To be able to work and provide and make money and to have food on the table. So I feel like we're so lucky, right? I feel like we're always about processing emotions now and expressing ourselves
yeah.
and healing. And I always wonder, like, did our moms ever heal from their traumas or from their problems, or like, I wonder what that does to somebody when you don't ever talk about
about
those things.
Yeah, and just how even like self-care, for certain things my mom is open to self-care, but for other things it's so awkward for her. Mm-hmm. I'm like, mom, like, take a bath, and she's like, what? She's like, for what? Like, how? I'm like, oh my god, okay, you know. So it's like she already has that reaction, so it's like, okay, let me warm it up for you, you know, let me mm-hmm. like convince you mm-hmm. that it's good for you, that it's okay for you to do that, mm-hmm. that you're gonna feel better, you know, after you're done. Like, what is that? What is self-care, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a trip.
Has she changed at all with, like, being able to accept routines of self-care over the years?
Or? Yeah, because she's getting older. So, yeah, this stuff is, like... And also, I think I hound her pretty hard with health stuff. She's taken up swimming, which is great. Nice. Yeah. Yes. And I mean, she took it up as like exercise, you know, and that's more of a, you know, like a body image type of thing, like a body mm-hmm. requirement. Like, I got to do the upkeep. But I'm like, no, this is also good for you, mom. Like, you have to keep going. You have to keep going because, you know, the convincing of all the reasons why it's good, not just because it's good for exercise, you know. Mm-hmm. So she does that. About eating too. Because she has a lot of like, she's had a lot of stomach issues. So mm-hmm. I'm like, well, you know, you can change those things. I would love for her to do yoga or to meditate. Because that woman's mind is just nonstop, like mine. But at least we've had a chance to, you know, learn this stuff or like give ourselves time to do these things. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I know it's interesting. You were growing up, you were jumping back and forth across the border all the time between Juarez and Texas. Mm-hmm. What was your sense of identity like growing up in a border town? And you know, people are always try to, I don't know. I don't. As immigrants, I feel like people always try to challenge your Americanness in a sense.
Yeah.
What was your sense of identity growing up?
The border was so normal that I didn't question it. I mean, that you grow up there, everything is normal. It's like going back and forth is normal. Mm-hmm.
Did you have a sense of, oh, I'm Mexican, I'm American, or you're just like, no, I'm just me?
I'm just me, because the majority of people there are Mexican. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you ever have to prove it or you ever have to say it. Mm-hmm. Now it's a little bit different because El Paso's growing a lot, so it's getting more diverse, which mm-hmm. is great. But what I remember is just being surrounded by Mexicans all mm-hmm. the time. And even at school, like, yeah, we would be speaking English and learning English, but we were still all Mexican, mm-hmm. you know. Maybe after we're done with the lesson, we could be go back to Spanish, you know, mm-hmm. go back to, you know, discussing what's for lunch. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was just the lesson for lesson's sake. It wasn't like, oh, this is who I am or this is my lifestyle. It was just mm-hmm. like, this is what I have to learn and that's it. Mm-hmm. I have to get a good grade and that's it. It's when I left that I was like, oh my God, like, again, the socialization, it is Americanization, it really is. I mean, even crossing back and forth, we would get like the lecture routine of like, what are you supposed to say every time that you cross so that you're allowed to cross? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have to say American. Back then they didn't have like the passports and like the super electronic cards that they mm-hmm. have now. Back then you would just say American and that's it. And if for whatever reason the Border Patrol, you weren't convincing, or you know, the Border Patrol needed extra information, they could ask you. And you had to be prepared for those questions. Like, okay, if you're American, what school do you go to? Mm-hmm. Where do you live?
So it's very much at the mercy of the officer.
Yeah. And so we would, like, practice those things. So my mom would be like, you know, if they ask you what school you go to, what are you going to say? And we had mm-hmm. to practice. Okay, I go to Alta Vista. Mm-hmm. Okay. Where do you live? And you have to know your address. Oh, I live on Calvin Street. Mm-hmm. Where are you going? Or why are you crossing? Mm-hmm. It's like, I was just visiting my grandma. Mm-hmm. Okay, where are you going now? I'm going home. Like, we had to know how to respond to all of those things because we didn't want to get held back. You know, mm-hmm. we wanted to go home or we wanted to whichever way. So, so it's crazy. In hindsight, back then, all of that was normal. Mm-hmm. But in hindsight, it just reminds me of, like, what migrants have to do. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it kind of reminds me of a little bit, although it could or could not be as severe, but, like, how, like, Black folks have to, like, train their kids about the cops, you mm-hmm. know? It's like, okay, if you see a cop, what do you do? Mm-hmm. What to do and what not to do? Mm-hmm. I feel like I learned a version of that, but on border mm-hmm. tactics, you know? And, but I didn't see it that seriously. To me, it was just like, okay, you know, this is what I have to do. This is what I have to learn. And I have to say it right. And that's it. It wasn't a big deal. It didn't seem like a big deal. And also because we never got held back. Mm-hmm. Had I witnessed that, I probably would have been like, oh, okay. Okay, this is serious. Mm-hmm. But growing up, I don't know what kids are like now. Mm-hmm. Like now that people are getting held up a lot more, and now that they ask you a lot more questions, now that, I mean, enforcement is crazier now. Before, it was a lot more fluid. So I don't know what it's like for kids now. But I see my cousins going through the same thing.
Mm, the ones that are still in El Paso?
Yeah. Like my tias or my cousins training their kids the way we got trained.
And how is it crossing there now? How has it changed since?
Yeah, like the lines take forever because it's very thorough. Like now you have to have those electronic type passports, like mm-hmm. it has some kind of chip in there. So it's harder to replicate those. Before it was just like, mm-hmm. I don't know, something laminated. I don't know, it was easier. It was way easier. Mm-hmm. But now you have to have that. If they want to look through your car for any reason, they will. They ask you a lot more questions, sometimes some that I don't remember at all. Like one time they asked me and my mom, because my mom remarried, so she has a different name, and she was like, oh, who is this? Oh, this is my daughter. How come y'all have different names? Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, if you want to go into it, you know, like the chismes side of it. But like, why is that abnormal? Like, mm-hmm. it's just, you know, my mom remarried. What? Mm-hmm. You know? So, it's just because it's so thorough, they go through, you know, you and your car and all that stuff. The lines are longer. And a lot of that happened after 9/11. Mm-hmm. When they reinforced the border after that.
And how are you... So given this current political climate we're in, with this crazy wall thing that's going on,
yeah,
how do you feel about that? How is that, you know, especially growing up in a border town, what does that make you feel, or what have your thoughts been around that?
And this is something that I also saw, like, on an article, and I've been saying this too, is that, like, people will make it's the immigration policies from D.C. or from DF, mm-hmm. you know. But these places don't understand how border communities function. Like, border mm-hmm. communities are completely interdependent. They rely on each other for everything. like labor, their economies are completely interdependent, families, you know, that live on opposite sides. You can't have one without the other. Mm-hmm. And so, people feel like you can, like, divide these two countries, and you can't. Mm-hmm. You cannot. And especially on a local level, on a border local level. So, I can't say that after they reinforced it, after 9/11, we wouldn't go back and forth as much anymore. Mm-hmm. Because of the long lines, and also because all these requirements, like that card costs a lot more. Mm-hmm. Everything costs more. So if people don't have money to get all of these like required things, it's harder for you to have permission, that whatever it takes for you to go back and forth. So that ID or that permission or that permit or that whatever, that's gonna cost money. So I have had family, like, we're so used to having our family gatherings, mm-hmm. that, and having everybody there, that after it got reinforced, that wouldn't happen as much. Like, there would be like one absent, you know, family member. And it was because, you know, they haven't bought their passport yet. Mm-hmm. Their local passport. Mm-hmm. Or we wouldn't go to Juarez because it's like, oh, you know, we don't want to wait the line. Or when it got really bad, when it was when the war on drugs hit Juarez really bad between, mm-hmm. like 2006 and 2010, 11, 12, something like that. We didn't want to get caught, you know, in the violence. We didn't want to get shot. Mm-hmm. So, because it was just so random. It was like, you know, every day there was a count of bodies, and it's like, mm-hmm. it could happen anytime, anywhere. So, that prevented us from going over there, which is also a trip because here we are trying to be, you know, cautious or like careful of ourselves, but our family's on the other side. So it's, mm-hmm. like, I don't know. I got a little judgmental about it because I'm like, that's hypocritical. Like, we can't do that. We can't stop, you know, we can't stop going to Juarez for fear of our lives when our family's lives are in danger every day, you mm-hmm. know? But that's what a lot of people did. And it's real. I mean, it's fear. It's real fear. You don't want anything to happen to you.
What do you think is going to happen, or how's now, it going to be from now?
I don't know. It's going to be harder to go back and forth. I think a lot more people, you know, because it's a money-making thing, I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of arrests. There's going to be a lot of people going to
deportation centers.
Uh-huh, mm-hmm. Detention centers. One of my uncles was in a detention center for about like 5 years or something.
And 5 years?
Yeah, and that's ridiculous too, because it's like, let's just say you committed a crime or you got caught, you know, without papers or whatever, like for them to keep you first, mm-hmm. for them to keep you in the U.S. for years first, instead of just sending you, mm-hmm. you know, to Mexico or wherever you're from, is ridiculous. Like, it's stupid. But that's what happened. Yeah, that's what happened to one of my uncles and one of my cousins as well. So, yeah, I mean, I fear for that. I have family in El Paso that don't have papers. So I don't know. It's already like super militarized. Mm-hmm. Super surveilled. There's a lot of surveillance. So, I mean, even my mom, she lives like four blocks away from the wall. And because she lives by the wall, there will be border patrol that are like consistently driving around the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So it was just, you know, just heavily surveilled. Is that the word?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just, you know, like people always looking at us. Yeah.
It's crazy because it used to be Mexico, actually.
Yeah, of course.
So like, what is this like border that was drawn when people are like, it's like Mexicans that have lived there for like generations. They're like, what do you mean?
I've been here.
When people are like, oh, go back to your country. It's like, I've always been here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you guys crossed the border over us. Mm-hmm. We didn't cross the border. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And if we're aware enough of our own history, we'll be able to not just know that, but feel it. Because you can feel it, like the land, like our connection to the land, the crops, you know, what we eat on both sides,
mm-hmm.
The way we talk on both sides. The way we understand each other and our culture is on both sides. You know, all of that is deep. Mm-hmm. And I took it for granted because, like I said, all of that was normal to me. But, yeah, after digging for my own history and stuff, then I was able to, like, understand it on a deeper level. And it was not just, like, a day-to-day thing.
And how are you feeling now as a woman of color, as an immigrant, as a Chicana, as a, you know, Latina woman,
mm-hmm.
in this current state?
I'm scared.
Political.
I'm scared. Yeah, because, something, you know, I had mentioned to you before is like, I've already been arrested, you know, for no reason at all.
Mm-hmm.
I've already been, racially profiled, you know. I've already been name called, I've already been discriminated, like, so now it's like fair game because it's sanctioned by the state.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's happening left and right and there's no consequences.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, what about you?
Yeah, it's an interesting time, but I think also now more than ever, I see a good thing that a lot of us are really coming back to community and connecting with community,
mm-hmm.
and I think finding solidarity with each other across ethnic lines and across age and sexuality and, you know, race and all these things collectively to fight what's going on. So I think despite all the messed up stuff that's going on, I think the people will do what's right in the end. So
yeah.
But yeah, it's being a woman of color, it's, you know, you're kind of like at the bottom rung of all the stuff that's happening.
Yeah.
So
what does your mom think about what's happening, or what does she say?
My mom doesn't engage with it. I don't know how much she is or isn't like your mom. I mean, she doesn't express things of like trauma or pain or upsetness, or she doesn't process her emotions when it comes to things like that. She just kind of acts like everything is gonna be, you know, whatever, it doesn't matter what happens, we're going to get through it.
Mm-hmm.
So she doesn't really talk about stuff. How about your mom?
Do you tell her?
I haven't had a chance to talk to her yet, actually, since all the dramatic decline of stuff happening this past month. But I definitely will when I go home.
Mm-hmm.
How about your mom?
Yeah, she's kind of the same. I mean, now she's a citizen and she doesn't work mm-hmm. anymore. So she's relatively safe, but I always tell her stuff. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, Mom, it's going to get really bad.
Yeah.
She's like, we're going to have to be doing stuff, you know? We're going to have to, like, take care of our families, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah. But I don't know. I don't know how serious. Because she's not, yeah, she's not engaged.
Yeah.
In the politics. She doesn't even vote.
Oh, well, now maybe it's a good time for us to get our moms engaged.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Thank you, Yadira, so much for sharing your stories about growing up
yes, in El Paso. Thank you. Thank you so much. I wish we could do this reversed. If it's possible, that would be great.